You're listening to a podcast from 702.
So it's only a week to go to the local government elections, and there's just so much at stake. You know, driving around this past weekend, I was just so struck by how things just look so run down. You know, the city just looks so run down. Filth, burst water pipes, infrastructure that hasn't been maintained. Then you listen to the radio and you hear about power and water shortages, crime, inefficiencies, wasteful expenditure, corruption. And here we are, nearly at the next local government elections. And the question is, who will change the situation around? And it starts with us, you know, voting for people that will be able to get that done properly. So leading up to these elections, over the past couple of weeks, we've been counting down to the elections by speaking to the director at Third Republic, Paul Berkovitz, which is a non-profit organization working for political change and grassroots democracy in South Africa. So one of the things that they do is that beyond the research, right, and of course bringing together trends and observing and putting together data on what's happening on the ground, they also provide support for independent candidates and small parties, because to be able to do this, you need immense resources. So they've got their finger on the pulse of how the system actually works. And that's why we've invited Paul to speak to us leading up to these elections. So last week, we started a conversation about coalitions, and we have broken it up into two parts. And today we bring you our part two, and we'll be looking at several things around coalitions, especially when you think of how things have started to play out over the years. The popularity of the ANC has slipped in successive elections and was below 50% in places like Tshwane, in Johannesburg, in Nelson Mandela Bay in 2016. And so inevitably, South Africa is in for many decades of coalitions, depending on, of course, how these parties and how what kind of changes they make to persuade us to give them the majority. And so today we'll be forward-looking. We'll take a forward-looking view and look at coalitions post the 1st of November. If you have any questions or comments, 011-883-0702, voice notes and WhatsApps on 072-702-1702. Paul, good to be with you again. Can you believe how close we are?
Good afternoon, Azania. Yeah, it's really crunch time. It's elections all day, every day from now on, and we've seen some crazy stories. You're talking about the cities being run down. I agree. It's not just the cities. I'm seeing some campaigning posters that look like they were recycled from 2019. I don't want to call out any parties.
Yeah.
But when you see that deep blue tinge, which is the longest lasting ink, and all the other colors are washed out, you know that those are not fresh posters.
Mm, they were stored somewhere for a whole year. Okay, someone's garage, because it's expensive. So, Paul, let's start by looking at this particular tool. You were involved in the development of this tool that was launched last week, mycandidate.opencitieslab.org, where you enter your street address. I was still playing around with it just before the show, and it tells you your ward and which candidates are standing for that ward seat. Someone on Twitter actually commented to say that it's generally so time-consuming going out there to find all this information out, but it's this makes this tool so useful because it brings it all together for you. What was the thinking?
Thanks for bringing it up, Azania. We're very excited about this tool. My part was quite small and at the very beginning, and I'll take you through the story very quickly. As you alluded in the introduction, we do a lot of research, and one of the things we decided to do was clean the data, also scrape the data or wrangle the data, depending on your jargon. If you had been looking when the IEC released the list of candidates, it was in a series of PDF files, one for each province, and it was quite hard to navigate to, you know, the candidates weren't arranged by ward, they were arranged by party, so if you wanted to see who was running in your ward, it wasn't easy. We used a free tool called Tabula, which was developed by the Knight Foundation, which is a non-profit foundation invested in better media tools and also data-driven media solutions. And the tool allowed us to convert all these PDF files to a spreadsheet very easily. Why this is important, it's because the data becomes what we call machine readable. When you have a spreadsheet, whether it's a Google sheet or an Excel sheet or whatever, you can tell the computer very quickly to sort the data, to filter it, to build what we call pivot tables to look for different info. So what we did is we cleaned the data and we tweeted about it through the company account and said, here is the file if you want to search for what's going on in your ward. And you know, we provided that and we released it into the wild and we didn't think anything more of it. And then in the next 5 days, two organizations, one, Open Cities Lab, who, as you've mentioned, is in the URL. We'll mention it again. And the other one, Open Up, the first one is from Durban. The second one is based in Cape Town. And they're both headed by really good people that are proud to call colleagues that we've worked with before on other projects. They had decided to see what they could do with this, and they built this tool in a matter of days. It's quite a low data tool. I'll give the URL as often as you'll let me, Azania. It's mycandidate.opencitieslab.org. And as you said, it will take you to a very stripped down portal. You enter your street address, ideally your street number, and at least your suburb. And it will identify your ward and all the candidates that run in your ward. And yeah, not just that. Mm. There's a little bit more. If you click on your candidate's name, it will take you to a quick Google search, which may or may not be useful. It will hopefully give you links to that candidate's social media accounts or any articles on them or by them in the media where you can learn a little bit about them. But a lot of candidates don't have a big online or social media
profile. Yeah.
We'll also show you, candidate by candidate, how many wards they're contesting. And we spoke about this last week, Azania. Mm. So I entered, I found, you know, I'm in Ward 74 in the city of Johannesburg. And by using this tool, and there are 26 candidates that are running in the ward. But if I now limit myself just to those candidates that are contesting my ward and are not just trying to harvest the vote by spamming the entire ward candidate list, it immediately goes down to about half, 13 or 14. And if I only look for those candidates that are in just one ward, then I'm down to about 10. Mm. And from there, I can start to search for the names and learn a bit more and make a more informed choice. And we're
absolutely
very excited about this.
Yeah, because I cruised it as well. 24 parties or candidates vying in my particular area. And as you say, some contesting in more than one ward. I mean, one particular candidate, I can't tell you how many wards they're contesting. They're just so many. This is a thick paragraph with all the different ward numbers that they are featured in. And I was trying to assess whether that puts me off. You know, what do I think of that? Do I see it as spam, or is my preference starting to go towards people that are only contesting in one ward, which is my ward? So that's an interesting dynamic, I think, that adds a new piece of data or process in my decision making, you know, a process to engage with in the decision making. So if you want to go play around, just go to mycandidate.opencitieslab.org, and that's where you'll be able to find this entire tool. It's very useful. Let's go to Keith calling from Athol. Keith, you have a question for us this afternoon.
Hi, Zanin. Hi, Paul. Sorry, you just touched on it now. I was looking through in my ward, and I noticed that in one particular case, there were candidates standing in no less than 50 other wards. Mm. Okay. So I've got three questions. Although unlikely, what happens if such a candidate wins three wards? Does he get three council seats and hence three council votes? And the second question is, assume the candidates put down a deposit to contest it, which they or their party forfeit if they don't get a certain percentage of the total number of votes. So if a candidate stands in 50 wards, do they pay a single deposit or do they pay 50 deposits? And so finally, you know, I'm trying to understand what is the rationale or benefit of registering a single candidate in 50 separate wards?
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Keith. If you want to touch on that briefly, Paul.
Yeah, thanks, Azania, and thanks, Keith, because I did want to talk a bit quickly about why parties use this practice. And to touch on your point, Azania, does this put you off or not? And why would you vote for such a candidate or not? What's the strategy? Okay. So, Keith, you've got three questions. I don't know all the answers in terms of all the clauses and the sections in the Electoral Act and the various laws. I wouldn't be surprised if you pay as a party to register a candidate in every ward, even if it's the same name over and over again. I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
And just to clarify, I think we said last week, if you're an independent candidate, you can only register in one ward. Mm. But if you are a candidate registered under a party, you can register in all the wards. I think there's one or two candidates here in Joburg, Azania, who are in all 135 wards. Mm. Okay. What happens if that candidate wins? So again, highly unlikely. I don't know if there's ever been a precedent for what would happen. I'm not sure if the party would have to forfeit all the other wards where they only had the one candidate. I would like that to happen. I don't know if they're allowed after the fact to register new ward candidates, but I suspect that they're not. Finally, why would you do this? So let's just briefly recap how the whole electoral system works at local government level. You've got two votes. You've got a ward vote and you've got a PR vote. And the proportional representation, the PR vote, is for a party. So that's interesting. If you're an independent candidate, you can't be on the PR ballot, only on the ward ballot. And if you're a party candidate, well, you know, you can vote for the same party as a ward candidate or a PR candidate. Yeah. Now, what's interesting about the system, especially if you're a party, all the votes at the end of the day, ward and PR votes, are in a sense tallied as if they were PR votes. It gets a bit complicated. But the formula adjusts the seat allocation, at least for political parties, so that a party will get the number of seats across the whole council, ward and PR, in proportion to their total votes. What this means in practical terms is that a ward vote for a party is not wasted. Even if that ward candidate isn't elected, those votes get added to the party's PR tally, and then the party gets a chance to get more PR councillors. Mm. So to answer the question, Keith, which I think a lot of people are asking, why would you register the same candidate again and again and again? It's so that you hope that even if you get 1% or 2% or 3% of the ward vote in every vote in every ward, those votes all add up and get added to your PR tally. And we've spoken about this in terms like harvesting the vote, spamming the ballot, but it's been an effective strategy for some parties. Mm. I don't want to single anyone out because, and I know I've done this when I've tweeted about in the last couple of weeks, but in Joburg, for example, there are 135 wards, and the Freedom Front Plus has only got about 12 or 13 ward candidates, and they've divided those wards among them evenly, each candidate standing in about 12 wards.
Okay.
So the party's got big brand name recognition, but it's not invested a lot of resources in putting forward ward candidates that the party thinks will win the ward and run as ward councillors. They just want the Freedom Front Plus logo on every ward ballot so that they can get those votes and add them to the PR total.
Right. So, Paul, let's take a quick break and then we'll conclude our conversation around coalitions.
Spend your afternoon with Azania Mosaka on 702.
Let's walk the talk.
So, Paul, let's get straight into this idea of coalitions, which seem to be inevitable for our foreseeable future. How difficult are coalitions to manage?
Azania, they're very difficult. We've seen over the last 5 years in our metros, we looked at Nelson Mandela Bay, Joburg, Tshwane, smaller municipalities like Mogale City, Metsimaholo, many other municipalities in northern KZN and the Western Cape. But especially those in the metros, Azania, we've seen council coalitions changed 3 or 4 times in Nelson Mandela Bay. We've seen gridlock, Metsimaholo. They had to have dissolved the council and redo the entire ward and PR elections in a big bumper by-election because they couldn't even form a council. Hmm. So, and it's not just in South Africa. We know that coalitions can be difficult in other countries also.
Yeah. So what are the different parties saying about who they will work with?
Oh, that's interesting, Azania. We've seen that for a couple of weeks now, Herman Mashaba has said Action SA is open to forming coalitions with any party except the ANC. The DA, the big headlines in the Sunday papers yesterday were that the DA will form coalitions with any party except the EFF, and they will include the ANC in their considerations for coalitions, except in Nelson Mandela Bay. So there's some interesting configurations. The EFF and the ANC, as far as I can see, haven't ruled out coalitions with anyone, and it will make for some interesting discussions if we take these parties at their word. But Azania, we know that the parties will say one thing in the campaigning stage to appeal to voters, and then we will see once the dust is settled which party has won what percent in which municipality, and they will probably have different discussions and have different things to say when it comes to building coalition.
Yeah, and find ways to justify a change in position. But what usually also happens is that political parties centralize power. And when you think about municipal or provincial coalitions, I suspect the only way they'll survive is if the national leadership supports that particular coalition. So what's the upside and the downside of this dynamic that you're dealing with local levels, but this has to come from above, almost like a blessing and continuously of this coalition has to come from above?
This is a very interesting argument, Azania, and I'm not sure, maybe it's my biases, I'm not sure that I agree that there's going to be a greater centralization of power and that for the big parties, all coalition agreements will come from above, from the top, and then filter down. There's some evidence, at least, that regional and provincial and local factions of the ANC, DA, and EFF would rather make their own decisions at a local level. And that could be interesting. We can talk about the ripple effect. We can talk about how a coalition in one municipality affects others. So, for example, the IFP were in a coalition with the DA in Johannesburg from 2016 to 2019. But after Mashaba resigned as mayor of Joburg, the IFP then supported the ANC and Jeff Makuba as mayoral candidate, and that had a knock-on effect on the IFP's relationship with the DA in some of those KwaZulu-Natal municipalities where the IFP was the senior coalition partner, and the IFP was actually hurt by that decision. Now, if you're an IFP provincial leader in KZN, you're going to be hurt by what the national structures are doing in Johannesburg, and this can potentially cause friction and a schism between the national leadership and the regional leadership.
Let's quickly look at the political consequences and maybe even consequences for the electorate of coalitions.
Right. So the I think communities and voters have been the biggest losers, Azania. I think most of the voters in Nelson Mandela Bay, for example, we keep coming back because that's just been a ping pong game of coalitions. I think most of those voters, whether they voted for the DA, the ANC, or one of the smaller parties, wouldn't have wanted this. In retrospect, maybe they would have been happy to compromise and give their parties more leeway to form coalitions, because the alternative, what's actually happened, is that the normal business of local government has been badly hurt where the coalitions have failed. Budgets have been delayed. Councils have been collapsed because one or other big party has walked out and there hasn't been a quorum. So we don't know what exactly is going to happen, but I can tell you that as far as we're concerned at the Third Republic, we were already thinking, we are obviously concentrating on the election, but we are thinking post-election what resources and mechanisms and relationships can be built by communities with civil society, with organizations like ours, to make sure that where there are coalitions, they work, and that parties aren't just allowed to swap sides or
play destabilize
narrow politics.
The system.
Pardon me?
And destabilize the system.
Exactly. Exactly.
We wait to see. Interestingly, the DA says voting, they're discouraging voters from voting for smaller parties. And the IFP's come out quite critical, saying that this is really unconstitutional. What they're saying goes against the values enshrined in the Constitution. So I wonder what a fragmentation of the vote kind of what it does, because then it means we're really forced into multi-party coalitions. Yes. Where management of these arrangements becomes even harder.
Well, again, Azania, we can look at the examples and the outcomes of the last 5 years, and we know that in our system, given what it is and the proportional representation system, it does give small parties a lot more power than they have under other systems. Okay. We can look at some of these coalitions with our partners, like, for example, the Patriotic Alliance in both Nelson Mandela Bay and Ekurhuleni, and even, let's say, the IFP in Johannesburg or the Freedom Front Plus in other DA-led coalitions. Mm-hmm. These smaller parties are able to extract more concessions, sometimes positions on the mayoral council or even deputy mayorship. And again, this is the narrow politics we're talking about. Some of these councillors have crossed the floor and joined different coalitions, have collapsed this one, joined another one, just to get more power for their party. And we need to think of ways as civil society, as ordinary South Africans, to put a stop to this. We have the system we have, and we recognize that there is room for opportunism among small parties, but I think we're all sick of what's been going on for the last 5 years.
Yeah, so insincere. Paul, thank you very much. We'll touch base again next week on D-Day on the 1st of November. Thank you.
Thanks, Azania. Looking forward.
That is the director of Third Republic, Paul Berkovic.